Welcome to Season 4 of The Farcast, bringing you experts and insiders every week to help you navigate the economic and investing landscape. Now, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to The Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. We have a great lineup for you this morning. Here we are, February the 25th, making progress here through 2021. Markets have been all over the place, but in general, higher. Been a little bit of a sawtooth approach here lately, a little more volatility in stock prices.
And bond yields have moved higher. That's not really ideal. But to understand all of this and the recent spike up and new high in the stock market, we're going to turn to our old pal, Kenny Polcari, managing partner of Case Capital Advisors, the voice for so many years of the New York Stock Exchange. Hey, welcome back, KP.
Thank you, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be here.
We are glad you're here. Kenny, a couple of days ago, we saw the market really trade down over 300 points and then, boom, bounced all the way back. Was that our near-term bottom? Will we make new highs? We've made a new high. Is this it for now? Where are we going? What's going on?
It's so funny you say that because you're exactly right. You and I discussed this. I think on the last one, I talked about how I was expecting this 7 to 9% pullback. And isn't it interesting? The NASDAQ was down 8.5%.
Right.
Yet the Dow's only off was only off a half percent. The S&P was down 3%, and the Russell was down 4%. So in my view, it wasn't what we were looking for. If you look just at the NASDAQ, it absolutely was. Fell right into line where we said. Now, one way or the other, and this is kind of the theme that I'm going with these days, it's all about exceeding expectations. Everywhere you look is exceeding expectations. Right. And so therefore, that's causing this positive momentum once again.
What do you mean exceeding expectations, Kenny? What's exceeding expectations?
Well, every single metric you look at, whether it's the virus, right, it's declining faster than expected. The vaccinations are up more than expected. The macro data better than expected. Earnings season was better than expected. Inflation, although it's going to rear its ugly head a little bit, Powell doesn't think it's going to be any problem. The Fed is going to continue to stay with rates at zero. Biden administration is going to continue to push through bigger and more expectations in terms of stimulus. And so therefore, across the board, everything is exceeding expectations. So it gets difficult for the market to really correct and back off under that circumstance.
You got a 10-year treasury that trading closer to 146 this morning, something
right.
like that.
Right.
How'd that happen?
Well, okay, and that was part of what caused the sell-off over the last couple of days, right? But look, all of a sudden, the talking heads, after Powell came out, and he's not worried about it, all the talking heads are saying, listen, it's not 1.4% that's going to draw the line in the sand. It might be 2%, but when we get to 2%, then the Fed's going to come in and control rates and prevent them from going above that. So the market essentially says, okay, we've got a floor on rates. The Fed funds rates will be zero. And then they're going to cap it with either yield curve control or Operation Twist to prevent 10-year treasuries from moving much beyond 2%. And so therefore, they won't derail this latest leg up that we've seen.
You know, I got a little concerned last week, Kenny. We talked to Dr. Jeff Lacker, former past president of the Richmond Federal Reserve Bank. But
they can't really do anything about the 10-year treasury. And I got a little concerned about that. Why? And he said they can't. They can get in there and do some buying, but they can't control that longer end.
Well, it's going to be interesting because it's not, if you listen to the talking heads, they're all talking about, yesterday, one of the guys on television was talking about how the Fed was going to come in and impose yield curve control, was going to be their way. And if that really wasn't working, they got Operation Twist, which will also help them. And I think that controls more the long end. But nobody seems to be concerned that the Fed's going to lose control about this at all. And that's kind of making investors and markets relax a little bit, which I think is a big mistake. Because honestly, I agree with you. I think once rates approach 2%, it's going to be much more of a headwind for stocks and for the market. So I think that pullback that you and I have been talking about, I still think it's ahead of us.
You think complacency is an issue here with investors, is what you're saying?
Yes. I think it's absolutely an issue. Now, look, they had somebody on TV this morning, Jeff Salt, who said that this secular bull run we're in could go on for another 7 years. So if he was anyone who had any money, he'd be piling in.
And I've heard others say that.
I hear you. And so it's that mentality that everyone's got this fear of missing out trade. And I think it's too complacent. I think there are bubbles along the way. Look, we've seen what's happened in SPACs. Look at this. The whole GameStop thing heated up again yesterday. To me, that just signals complete irrationality once again, at least in that space. But I get the sense that it's kind of permeating across the board.
You know, every day I think about something that Jenny Harrington said to me a couple of weeks ago. She said, the only thing I can tell you for sure is we're one day closer to a correction than we ever have been, you know, which makes sense. But Kenny, if you look back over 10 years, you know, every time you'd see any kind of a correction, it was really brief because we've had the Fed, some Fed president would rush to a microphone and say, well, we're going to cut rates or we're going to do this or we've got a program and don't you worry about a thing. And they're still jawboning this thing higher. And Powell and his comments were soft the other day. And hear that the Fed is looking much more at unemployment than they are anything else, which I guess makes sense. You know, they don't have any wage inflation yet because they still got high unemployment. When, you know, does jawboning stop working? Because this is something you and I've been talking about for years. How long can, you know, how big can this rock get until the Fed can't lift it anymore?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because I breached that a little bit in my note the other day. At what point does it really stop? And I don't really know, but I think like Jenny Harrington, I think we're getting one day closer to that happening, right? Because at some point, unless you make rates go negative, they're going to stay right where they are. And valuations and stocks, I think, have just gotten well ahead of where the economy is. So look, everyone's going, yeah, the economy's going to see expectations. But guess what?
They say the economy's coming back.
But I think that's already priced in a lot of that because people have been expecting it. So I think they've bought stocks to prices that already reflect an improving economy. And so when the improvement comes, everyone's going to go, okay, is that it? And then it's going to be this, you know, come to reality trade where I think you're going to see the market back off. Now, again, because the Fed is holding rates at zero, there's absolutely a floor under it. Do I think stocks are going to correct by 20%? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But look, we saw the NASDAQ correct at 8%, and really that was about it. They were pushing 8%. Some of the names got hurt even more. Apple was down 20%. So that was a screaming buy at Apple, right? Went on sale for 20%. But I don't think there's going to be that big correction. But I do think somewhere around 7 or 9%, 10% in the broader market is not only due, but would be healthy.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Kenny just said something very important, I think, ladies and gentlemen. And it's one of the scarier things that somebody says to me about a stock that I might own.
Which already being priced in. Is scary. And here's why, because I look at fundamentals. I do look at what a company's earnings, what recovery is going to mean for stocks here. And so as we look at that and you see prices move up, you say, well, all right, prices are moving up. But I think that my fundamentals are still good. And what Kenny is saying is, everybody's looking at the vaccine. Everybody's looking at the reopening. Everybody's looking at all of this stuff. And that's why stocks are up today. If that's why they're up today, all of a sudden you're taking out one of the planks of my argument that might be driving stocks up tomorrow. And maybe they're not going to go up tomorrow. Maybe they've already made their move based on future expectations. When I hear something's priced in, it makes me a little bit nervous, Kenny. What do you think? So you heard Jeff Salt say, if you had any money, you just keep investing it. What are you telling clients? I mean, is it safe to go back in the water and just keep investing?
So listen, here's how you have to approach this, and you do it the same way. It doesn't necessarily matter in my mind. If you've got money and it's got to be invested, you should stick to your plan. And that plan might be there are some names you absolutely have to trim because there are still opportunities. There are still names that are due to perform better in the months ahead. But there are certainly some names that have outperformed. And so it's just a matter of risk management, right? You should always be in the market. You should always be long-term investing. But that doesn't mean you just go in haphazard, right? You just start buying everything because you think the market's going up.
Well, you said buy Apple, you know, on a dip like that.
Apple traded down 20%. Apple's the kind of a name. See, Apple's the kind of name for me. Like, I would never sell Apple.
I
think you just buy Apple and you buy Apple. Now, here's the other thing. You could act as a wealth manager like yourself or like me, whatever. You can maintain, you have a core position in your mind of what an Apple holding should be. And anything above that core position is what you use to kind of trade around it to create that extra alpha. So at times when Apple seems that it's a little bit overdone, take that extra, keep the core position, take the extra, take the money off the table. You haven't right. sold your core position in Apple. You still own it, but you're using the extra to take some money off the table to put the work in another name that's underperforming, or just to put in the bank and wait. If Apple pulls back in again, you put the money back to work. And you
are there any other areas you find now? You know, we were listening to Urio, we were listening to Barugian. They were like, some of them were buying Bitcoin, some of them bought gold. Urio was buying silver. What do you think about that inflation trade? Do you like currencies? Tell us what you think of Bitcoin too at $50,000.
So here's what I
that
think
was a
about,
heavy sigh, ladies and gentlemen, out of my friend Polcari over there.
So here's what I think about Bitcoin. I think it's absolutely gaining much more credibility across the spectrum. You see Bank of New York now willing to custody it, trade it, transfer it, hold it. You're seeing that now in some of the other banks. It's gaining wide adoption across the spectrum. Tesla, Square, all these other companies that are now using it and being able to allow clients and customers to either trade it, buy it, invest it. And so it is absolutely gaining credibility. And so I think you have to have exposure to it. That doesn't mean you just go out and you buy, you know, you got to buy it in pieces, because you can buy fractional pieces of Bitcoin. You could take $1,000 a month and buy Bitcoin. You don't have to buy, you don't have to buy, take $50,000 to buy a Bitcoin.
You own any Bitcoin, Kenny?
I do. I just started digging. I started digging a hole for myself.
Is that what you said?
No. When it was like 11,000, I started, and then, you know, traded up to 25,000. I go, yeah, maybe I should sell it. But then I didn't. And I keep buying it, and I just buy it little by little by little, right? So not a big part of my portfolio. It's probably got, you know, maybe it's 2% at the moment. It's not enough that's going to kill me, but that's the way I'm going to do it. The other thing, we were talking about this last night, you know, even though I think it's ridiculous that Doggy Coin or Dogecoin, pronounce it however you want, it's still trading at pennies, right? When you think about it, if you bought $1,000 worth of Bitcoin when Bitcoin was trading at pennies, what would that $1,000 of Bitcoin be worth today? Something like close to eight. I think they said something close to $8 million or something. $1,000 close to $8 million. And so I don't know, if you take $1,000 and buy $1,000 worth of Dogecoin at 15 cents, whatever it is, you know, am I willing to lose $1,000? Maybe, but we'll see. But I think you have to start considering some exposure to cryptocurrencies, whether it's through a fund, an ETF, whether it's, you know, directly, whether it's through Tesla, right? Because if you buy Tesla, now you own some Bitcoin.
Yeah, you might be able to buy a number of things. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Polcari is president, CEO of Case Capital Advisors, longtime voice of the New York Stock Exchange, and a great friend of ours here on the Farcast. Ken, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, Michael, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're the best. We're going to come back with Dan Mahaffey. We're going to figure out what's going on in Washington. Are they beginning to get along? We're going to ask Mahaffey when we come back on the Farcast. Please stay with us.
Michael Farr and the Farcast are proud to support Heroes, Inc. Heroes supports the spouses and children of law enforcement officers and firefighters who gave their lives in the line of duty to the greater Washington, D.C. community. Their singular goal is to honor the supreme sacrifice made by these individuals by caring for their families. Heroes' work begins within 24 hours of the tragic loss and continues indefinitely. We invite you to learn more about Heroes' mission at heroes.org. We hope that you will consider supporting Heroes as they endeavor to honor those who protect us. That's heroes.org. Heroes, here for you, here for good. And now, back to the Farcast and your host, Michael Farr. Welcome back to the Farcast, and now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. Terrific segment with Kenny Polcari. Now joining us, Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, and of course, his most important title that he's ever had in his entire life, Senior Political Analyst on the Farcast. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Wait till the listeners get to pick the tattoo that says Senior Farcast Political Analyst. I can't wait.
Won't that be terrific? You know what, Dan? We're coming up. We're coming out. We've got a new logo for the Farcast, and we have T-shirts that we are going to sell on our website, Farcast T-shirts. You're going to need to get them. We may even have a giveaway of a T-shirt or two every week. But the front of it is our really attractive and very racy, sporty-looking Farcast logo. And on the back are the names of all of our Farcast contributors, including right up at the top, Dan Mahaffey. You can pre-order early to get yours. All right, Dan. I mean, aren't you excited? Just thinking.
I'm so excited. And all my family now knows what they're getting for Christmas this year. I'm done in February.
We just spoiled it for them. Dan, that's great news for Harry, because he's managing the Farcast paraphernalia business, and you have a big family, so he's happy about that. All right, Dan, on my list for this morning, as we look at Wall Street, Washington, and the world, this move to Washington, I'm looking at the nominees of President Biden, and they're running into a little bit of trouble, some of them, becoming a little more controversial. Their discussions, of course, yesterday with the U.S. Postal Service, that seems to have been bogged down, and the head of the Postal Service is giving a bit of a mea culpa. Will he survive? The borders look like they're coming under more pressure, particularly the Mexican border. Is coming under more pressure. Trump is going to CPAC. The state of the cities across this country, major cities, whether we are in Seattle or Manhattan, Boston or Atlanta or Chicago, are struggling with much higher homelessness, much higher levels of crime. Washington, D.C. as well. As we listen, Dan, I'm just skipping here, the nominees that we have been listening to from President Biden are talking tough on China. Are they delivering a message? Are they beginning to give us a bit of a preamble of what we could expect? And then, of course, we've got the minimum wage discussion that seems to be gaining some traction. We're hearing from all sides. Where would you like to start?
As we go through this laundry list, and we'll be quick on these. We got a lot to talk about today.
Lots to talk about.
Minimum wage, look, everyone's looking at it. Everyone's coming forward with proposals. You obviously have the Democrats with their 15, but we're also seeing some Republicans come in with their proposals now. A lot of this goes back. Let's not forget, 2020, Trump carried Florida, but that state also voted two-thirds for a new higher minimum wage. So there's a political groundswell for some of these things, be it a minimum wage, free education. These are all things on a laundry list you want to go through. But on the minimum wage, you see the Republicans coming forward with their proposals. Senator Hawley from Missouri has the most interesting one thus far, which would change it so that there's not a higher minimum wage, but a person would have an effective wage of $16.30 after taxes. So tax credits and other things would combine to make the effective wage in the U.S. $16.30.
You know what I think happened in Florida? I think somebody, a couple of folks down here, I'm a Florida resident, did the math on $15 an hour, and $15 an hour times a 40-hour work week times a 50-work week year. I know the year has 52 work weeks, but you get a couple of weeks vacation. So 50-work week year comes to about, what, $32,000, Dan? Is
right.
It something like that?
Yeah, something like that ballpark.
And then all of the rich people in Florida looked up and said, oh, my God, you've got to pay them at least $32,000. Who in the hell could live on less than $32,000? I think really when you raise it and frame it that way, I think more people say, of course, let's pay $32,000. The problem is you're increasing the costs for employers. And when you do that for the nation's largest employer at Walmart, and you say, okay, we're going to take it up that much higher, that affects profitability. That's going to be costs that are added to Walmart prices so that they can cover those wages, and everybody's going to end up paying for it. And that's going to lead to some inflation. So wage inflation, those increases in the minimum wage, get passed through. And when you've got an economy that's trying to recover, higher prices, lower profits act as a bit of a headwind act as a bit of a headwind to economic growth. There is a very strong argument on the flip side that says, wait a minute, it's the one that VAR has been making for a long time. More money in more hands is more stimulative because we haven't had any velocity of money. Remember, the sugar at the bottom of the iced tea glass needs to be stirred. We need to get that money moving out there. How does that strike you, that argument? And we've got to move on from this, but it is a hot topic, and will it get passed?
I think we need to have an earnest discussion separating big business from small business in this, and perhaps if small businesses get more credit as this is phased in. But there's also the counter argument to what we have and what's being said a lot in Washington and even among conservatives is, if Walmart and these other big employers are paying low wages, and then you have Section 8 and food aid and Medicaid and all those taxpayer programs that keep those workers healthy and fed, then we're subsidizing, taxpayers are subsidizing low wage workforces around the country for these companies. So that's the other phase. Now we can go down the, certainly discuss the benefits of lower prices. But look, this is a real discussion. I think we're going to see the minimum.
So the argument is the taxpayer, because there are so many social benefits
right
for lower income people, is the taxpayer, by virtue of those benefits, providing a sort of one level of subsistence that allows Walmart to pay not as much as they might.
Right.
Otherwise.
And we're picking on Walmart overly here, but many big companies that pay lower rates.
Okay, it's an interesting argument.
And we'll hear more of that. I think the next one, as we go through Washington on the news, China, as you mentioned with the nominees, I don't think it's just the nominees. I'm looking closely at this supply chain executive order that the administration has come out with.
A big deal, Dan. This is a big deal.
That is a huge
disruption.
Looking at pharmaceuticals, information technology. Look, we're seeing these semiconductor shortages affecting auto industry. You know, things you don't think of that are high tech are affected by this. And even down to the masks and gloves and basic medical equipment, as we saw. So it's not even just the high tech levels of the supply chain. That is definitely moving in a direction that's going to review this. It's certainly one that says, let's get less reliance on China. And it fits with this administration. They're keeping a hard position on China and recognizing that this is a longer term challenge, not just a one administration or change of administration pivot.
You know, a year ago, Dan, I was the first one on CNBC, and it was right about, actually, it was already right about now. Exactly. I went on and said, I think that this disease over in Wuhan, China, is causing supply chain disruptions. And I think now all of a sudden, and I'm going to say this the first time on air, I think that the chance of a recession in the U.S. is no longer zero, folks, because Ford is going to stop production in 2 weeks because they don't have parts. It doesn't matter, ladies and gentlemen, exactly why we don't have parts. I didn't foresee a pandemic. It certainly looked like this was going to spread. But when I was talking about that, I was talking about it economically. So it doesn't matter why you have a supply chain disruption. But if Ford and GM have to stop manufacturing, which they're getting ready to do again because they don't have microchips for all of their automobiles, and our modern day cars are loaded with these microchips, the Intel chips, the Taiwan semiconductor chips. And if we stop production, this is a big economic headwind. I don't think this one is priced in, but I think we've got to watch it, ladies and gentlemen. You're hearing far first. Watch this supply chain disruption. It's an economic headwind, big time, Dan.
At CSPC, we've actually done some reviews of semiconductor policy, so I won't get into the weeds here, but if you're interested in that, come over and check out our stuff.
Thepresidency.org
is our website.
Thepresidency.org. And so are some of Dan's columns and writings there that I commend to you highly. I think he writes very well. And as you know, he's very thoughtful. Okay, let's move on. You want to go to CPAC? You want to go to the State of the Cities? What else?
State of the Cities is really quick. I think it's, Republicans in Congress are still on this, but you've got a great piece in USA Today saying Republican mayors across the country desperate for aid and assistance of some kind. So this isn't even big cities. These are the mid-tier cities. For example, an interesting case was Miami, which was locked out of some aid just because its population happened to be under 500,000 officially. But Republican Mayor Ray Suarez of Miami, very supportive of this. So the Republican mayors are also saying that this aid for states and localities needs to come through. So they're a voice behind that.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, we have to watch the cities too, Dan, because the level of crime has gone way up. Number of homeless in the cities, way up. And the police presence, of course, over the past year has backed off a lot. And people, particularly in cities like Manhattan and Washington, Chicago, certainly you look out in Seattle and San Francisco and Los Angeles, wealthier people are out of those cities, which means there's a good chance these cities could lose their tax base because the cities are no longer pleasant to live in for wealthy people. You lose your wealthy people, you lose a lot of your tax base, you lose a lot of your revenue. I understand nobody's supposed to like or be nice to rich people. Frankly, I like rich people a lot. I really do. I'm a wealth manager. I wouldn't have much of a business if I didn't have wealthy people out there. I'm very fond of wealthy people. If you're not feeling the love, wealthy people, please call me at Farr Miller and Washington. I promise we love you at Farr Miller and Washington. But this is a real issue, Dan, because this is going to put a bigger burden on the city.
This is part of that burden that you're already seeing in property taxes, fees, revenues, licenses that cities use for revenue.
Who's going to pay them?
Well, that's a question. It's when do people come back to cities? That becomes a vaccination and health issue. When do people get back in offices? And the question, too, for some of these folks is, look, you have people who've decamped to Florida. How many hurricane seasons do they stay in Florida? When you have you see some of these stories of people buying farms and there's a shortage of small tractors because city slickers have decided to go out and start farms.
Right.
Well, how long is that going to, you know, how long is the Green Acres malarkey going to last before some people want to get back to Fifth Avenue?
You know, I talked to Buzz McIntosh yesterday, Buzz McIntosh of McIntosh Realtors in Frederick, Maryland. Buzz was telling me there were, you know, a few hundred properties for sale, only a few hundred properties for sale. But if you factored out those that are new under construction right now, there were really only 70 properties for sale in Frederick County. Frederick County, Maryland, is a huge county. So it's not just, you know, Florida and Texas where there's a huge demand. There's not much housing inventory anywhere as people are moving out of the cities. In fact, if you want to find inventory, go into the cities. There's plenty of stuff. You want a penthouse? You want an apartment in a city? You can have it.
Money's now's cheap. The time to buy up city real estate.
Don't you think? Maybe that's what we need to look at next. Dan, what are you going to be looking at next week? I can't believe it. We're out of time.
I think I'm going to continue to track some of these controversial nominations for the Biden administration. We touched on that, even though we didn't get to it. Look, I'll be frank. Some nominations are going through, but those people tend to look like you and me, Michael.
Yes.
The more diverse ones are having a little bit more trouble. Deb Haaland, Neera Tanden. Looks like Haaland will get through for Interior. Linda Thomas-Greenfield has gotten through at the UN. Neera Tanden, though, a little bit of a case there of also where her tweets caught up with her. But a lot of people will point out.
Well, and Joe Manchin is Joe Manchin, the kingmaker now in Washington. If Joe Manchin's against you, kiss it goodbye, right?
Well, that and Neera Tanden might have some solace that her nomination might have been worth $1.9 trillion, because if her nomination is the price to pay for Manchin being able to vote for the full price tag, then maybe it's worth it.
My goodness. Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress and senior political analyst on the Farcast. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back now with Stephanie Link. You've listened to Kenny talk to us about prices, what he thinks about pullbacks. We're going to dig down deep. We're going to talk about the fundamentals of stock investing, what she's doing with Portfolio, the chief portfolio strategist for Hightower Advisors and one of my best friends in the business, Stephanie Link, when we come back. Please stay with us.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Farcast. We'd like to invite you to follow Michael on Twitter and LinkedIn. On his social media feed, you'll find links to all of Michael's media appearances, articles he's been quoted in such newspapers as the Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, and, of course, the Farcast.
Additionally, Michael shares some of the articles we are reading at Farm Miller in Washington every morning that we feel have bearing on the investing landscape. That's Michael_K_Farr on Twitter and Michael Farr on LinkedIn. And now, back to Michael and the Farrcast. Thank you for joining us on the Farrcast. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. Thanks for so much for joining us again this week on the Farrcast. The 25th day of February, 2 months in, it's flying by here, folks. Kenny Polcari, very insightful, I think, as a trading perspective on what he's seeing from markets. And wasn't that interesting to hear that Kenny's buying Bitcoin in his own personal account each and every month, has been doing it since $11,000. He wanted to sell it at $25,000. Glad that he didn't. We'll see. We're going to track Kenny from now on in his Bitcoin purchases. He said about 2% of his personal portfolio. I love hearing stuff like that. It's interesting to hear what pros do when something starts moving that they really don't understand. Kenny understands cybercurrency, and then again, none of us understand cybercurrency. So it's interesting what's going on in Washington this week, Dan Mahaffey, and now, of course, the pièce de résistance, mes amis. We have Stephanie Link, of course, the chief investment strategist for Hightower Advisors, one of the brightest stars in Wall Street's sky, and a voice you need to listen to. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Hi, Michael. I'm so humbled by your comments.
I'm telling you, you've got to listen to Link. That's we're gonna have T-shirts made, stuff. Okay. So actually, we are having Farrcast T-shirts made. We've got a cool Farrcast logo, and we're putting the names of our top two dozen guests on the back. So yours is there.
Oh.
You're a top. We've got your name on the shirt, which is going to mean demand is going to go way up, you know?
Big time.
A Stephanie Link shirt. Now you know what to get all your family members for Christmas. A Farrcast T-shirt. All right, Stephanie, markets have been in this very interesting pattern where the NASDAQ has not been doing well. It's sort of the reverse of what we've seen in recent years, where the NASDAQ is not doing well. And all of those old stocks that you and I love a lot, that have really strong fundamentals, have been doing better. What do you make of this market?
I think the story is, and by the way, thank you again for having me on. It's always a pleasure. But I think the real story, Michael, as I think you probably would agree, is looking at interest rates. And
yes.
in the last 3.5 weeks, you're up 45 basis points. And
what does that mean to you? So we look at that, and you and I as pros say that's a big deal. Why does, tell Fred and Ethel why that's a big deal.
Oh, it's a big deal because interest rates are gradually going up. And the question is, so there are two things. Number one, we want to watch the speed because the equity markets, investors don't like if something goes up or down in a very, very fast manner, right? And believe it or not, 45 basis points is a very quick move in interest rates in a short period of time. So let's just-
Well, and if you start, you got to remember, we're starting at a 105. So ladies and gentlemen, that's a 40%, 45% basically increase in the yield on the 10-year treasury. And remember that also means there's been a drop in price.
Right.
So the prices of those bonds are falling. Those treasury notes are falling. The yields are right. That's a big move. You get 40, 45% in a yield difference in 3 weeks.
And it's a big move. So let's watch it.
Yeah.
Let's watch it. Remember, the 10-year bond yield is at 144. Pre-pandemic, the 10-year bond yield was at 2%. So we're not even close to where we were before all of this hit. So
are we getting upset over nothing?
I kind of think so. I really do. And I'll tell you why I think that's the case. I think the reason that interest rates are going higher is because the economy is actually recovering, because all of this massive liquidity that we've put into the market, fiscal policies that we're putting in place, and we're going to get more from the Biden administration,
right.
in terms of $1 trillion of fiscal help. We've had monetary policy accommodation. If you add it all up, Michael, if you add up all the fiscal that we put in place since last March and all the monetary policies that we've put in place since last March, that equates to 55% of U.S. GDP.
Yes.
Let's just put that into perspective for Fred and Ethel. Back in 2008, our last recession, if you will, or financial crisis.
Right.
That number, if you add it all up, is 5%. So my point is there's all kinds of liquidity sloshing around in the system, and it's actually starting to work. Because guess what? It usually takes about 10 to 12 months for all policies to get put into the economy.
At least.
Right? And so we're starting to see that. We're starting to see good economic data. And I know, look, I know there are parts of this economy that are terrible. I believe you me, I know a lot of friends that are in the restaurant industry and hospitality, leisure, and travel. And those are still in such a world of hurt, if you will. And that's why we're going to get more fiscal policies put in place to help them, to help the right people and the small and medium business owners. We still have 10 million people that are unemployed. That's, again, why we're getting more fiscal policy put in place. But there's a big part of the economy that is doing a lot better because of everything that has happened in terms of this liquidity. That's housing, that's autos, that's manufacturing. And it is even part of the consumer, believe it or not, that are doing better. Consumer, as you know, Michael, 14% savings rate. The historical average is 5%.
Right.
If you were to go back to that average number, right, you go, if you go from 14% savings to 5%, that's equivalent to $1 trillion in pent up spend potential. So that therefore the consumer is doing pretty good now, helped by the fiscal stimulus and the checks that were very well needed. And I think it's doing its job. And so you're starting to see the economy do better. You're starting to see the economic data points every day. I mean, today we just got better durable goods. We got an improvement in initial claims.
Yes, so we did. Jobless claims, yes.
The market is a forward-looking indicator, and it's telling you that, guess what, in 6, 8, 10 months down the road, maybe, just maybe, with all the vaccines that are now getting distributed and the COVID cases falling and the liquidity in the system, maybe, just maybe, that's actually good for the equity market.
So here's the debate I'm hearing, Stephanie, and I'm so glad you brought it up. As we look forward to the pent-up demand and all the cash that actually consumers have with the savings rate higher, that could fuel market. Markets are pricing in a lot. Kenny Polcari said, I think a lot of the future recovery that everybody's talking about is being priced in now. And if it's being priced in now, then really what's the upside from here? This is kind of the scariest question. I was telling listeners earlier, Stephanie, when I look at stock prices doing well, fundamentals doing well, and someone whispers those words to me, those chilling words, the appreciation's already priced in, Michael. It's done what it's going to do. And then I think, damn, it could be true because it's a forward pricing mechanism. How do you weigh that as an investor? All of the good news today that you're seeing and this big rebound Wall Street's expecting in August, September, post, a vaccine kind of a thing, big comeback, pent up spend. Everybody gets to go to the beach and spend money or get back on airplanes. How do you look at valuations versus what might be priced in today?
Well, it's a very good question, and it's very hard to tell what is priced in and what isn't. What I would say is, as we've seen a little bit better economy, and we are going to see better GDP growth, and we're going to see better earnings growth, because if GDP growth increases, well, then
yes,
S&P 500 profits should increase. And we know stocks follow profits, from our good friend Larry Kudlow. That is his famous saying. And so I would say that I think people are still very skeptical about what kind of recovery this looks like. And as you see better growth, a little bit higher interest rates, a little bit higher inflation, which we are seeing a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, that usually is a good recipe for what we're seeing in the markets today. If you look at the S&P 500 and you're like, okay, great, we're at new highs. But underneath the surface, we're seeing a pretty big rotation away from defensive quality growth stocks, including
yes,
technology, and into more value or economically sensitive sectors. And I would argue those sectors, like industrials, financials, materials, discretionary, parts of technology, those actually are still well off their highs in terms of the stock prices. And as the economy improves, their earnings will improve substantially. And so that's why I think you're seeing a rotation. So I think pockets of the market are certainly fully valued. Is that the FANG stocks? Is that software stocks? Is that stay-at-home stocks? Those are expensive to me. I think the ones that are not are the cyclicals or the economically sensitive companies. as well as the reopen companies.
So can you give us a couple examples of some of these cyclicals and reopen companies? I mean, your GameStop's doing very well today. it's up $75 a share today. This is so stupid, this GameStop thing, this Reddit. It's stupid, ladies and gentlemen. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Don't get caught with your stupid hanging out. There's some advice from Farr after 30 some odd years doing this. I mean, this, there's no there, okay? No. There's no there. Just remember, don't get caught with your stupid hanging out, and don't worry that it's up $77 a share now and on, it's stupid. Sorry, Steph.
You do not need to go there. There's a reason why there was such a short interest, because the fundamentals are not there, and that's exactly what you're totally right. The fundamentals, they had problems, they had issues. These Reddit traders, I think they know everything, and that. So I think that's silly. I would say on the reopen side, with strong fundamentals, and I think what's really important is some of these companies went to the debt market and actually improved their liquidity March, April, May. They were smart to do so because these are quality companies, but they were obviously getting impacted because everybody was staying at home. So what companies am I talking about? Wynn Resorts. They went to the market. Marriott hotels, they went to the market. The liquidities are tremendous. Boeing is also a reopen name, right? I mean, they have some problems with the 737 MAX and the 777 engines, but it's a reopen stock. And quite frankly, it is still down double digits. So those are all kinds of names, though, that I think make a lot of sense. I think you want to balance some of these things with, say, a Coca-Cola, who also is in fine shape on the balance sheet, but 50% of Coke's products are in restaurants and on-premise stores. So they too, believe it or not, it's a reopen name, and it has dramatically lagged.
Do you prefer that over Pepsi? I mean,
I do.
You do. I don't. But
I know.
You do.
You and I, we're in the same, we're always in the same stratosphere. I do, because it's lagged so much over the last several years.
I would go along with that argument. As for arguments that I like as to why I would buy a stock that the one has really lagged, I'm a big believer in hit them where they ain't.
And in this time, they're seeing a lot of challenges, but I will say they just raised the dividend. So that speaks to, again, their balance sheet, and they're managing the situation as best they can. And when we reopen, their business should nicely recover. Something like a TJX. No one's going into the stores, but they're also managing very
TJ well. Maxx is the company there. TJX. TJ Maxx. Yeah.
And we know housing is very strong, and they have home goods and home sense. And so I think eventually when people go to the stores, because the off-price retailers, we know people like a treasure hunt. It's not like you're going to go online and do the treasure hunt online. You really actually want to go to the stores. So when people feel comfortable to go back in the stores, those are kinds of the names that I think will do well. So I think you want to have diversification, to your point, always, whenever I talk to you, you always have a very well-diversified portfolio.
Yes.
Don't want to take too much risk. We want to protect the downside, but we want to take advantage of where we think that there's opportunity. And I think those names are really opportunity.
Keep about 30 stocks in our large cap growth portfolio, and that seems to give us, it's considered a concentrated portfolio on Wall Street, but I think it's plenty for us. By the way, you know, every so often, Laurie will suggest that we need to go into home goods. I have never made it out of home goods for anything under $300. And I walk in not needing anything. It makes me crazy. Okay, I can't believe this, Stephanie. We're out of time. Can give us a couple of words on Apple. Apple's pulled back 20%. Kenny Polcari says he'll back up the truck. He's never selling Apple, buy it all day long. I talked to an analyst this morning who said, yeah, it's down 20%, but on a metrics basis, it's not cheap. What do you think?
It's not cheap, but it is the poster child for 5G and the next technology upgrade.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I think they're doing a great job in terms of services. Talk about free cash flow. I mean, they're going to be buying back forever their shares. They're very shareholder friendly. It's overowned. It's overliked. But I do think this is one that you just own and you put it aside and enjoy what they are. And that's part of all of our lives, right? I mean, sometimes you have to do Peter Lynch investing, which is to say you invest in what you know.
You invest in what you know. You invest where you visit. Yes, those things that you use. Finally, are we ever going to have a pullback again, Stephanie? This is it. This is my last question, I promise. Are we going to have a pullback? Because it just looks like this damn thing keeps going up.
Yeah, we will have a pullback for sure. When I think we're going to have a pullback is when the Fed decides that they're not going to put their foot on the accelerator, and they may start to talk about, hey, guess what? We are so accommodative now, we might start to think about that we don't need it. And I think that will be a little bit concerning to some. And I think that's your opportunity, because there's still, as I mentioned at the top, very, very much liquidity. Even if they pull back a little bit, there's still so much liquidity in the system. Yep. And so I think you want to buy that. You want to buy that pullback. And I think you make a list of all the names I just mentioned, other names that you like and you own. I know you're a big fan of J&J and that kind of thing. You gotta make your list. And if you see a pullback, you wanna nibble for sure.
And Jenny Harrington, your friend and my friend, also a terrific investor. Jenny Harrington, when I asked her about the next downturn, she said, all I can tell you, Michael, is we're one day closer to the next downturn than we were yesterday. it's a good thing to remember, I think.
It is a good thing. Stay humble and just make sure that you stick to your process. That's so important.
Stick to your discipline. Avoid emotion, ladies and gentlemen. The best advice from one of the best people on Wall Street, Stephanie Link, Chief Investment Strategist at Hightower Advisors, and our great friend on the Farcast. That's it for another Farcast this week. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back next week. We are so grateful, truly, from the bottom of our hearts, that you join us each and every week. Thanks for your notes, your cards, your letters. From Naples, Florida, I'm Michael Farr. We'll see you next week. Bye.